Bam 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 bam. Hey everybody, welcome back to Go Help Yourself. We are a comedy self-help podcast that explores anything and everything related to self-help. We have a huge back catalog of book reviews and episodes about thought-provoking questions and articles and trivia and interviews and like now.
And another one.
And another one. Now we're back with another book review. And that's honestly, right. It's been a little while, but we're gonna suffer through it.
Thanks, Lise, for the vote of confidence at the top of the episode.
That voice that you just heard is the one and only, Misty Stinnett.
I wouldn't say only. I did find one other Misty Stinnett on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm. Who the f*** is she?
I think she's a treasurer for the Chickasaw Nation.
I'd rather know her.
That's right. Thank you. Again, coming in hot.
And that lovely compliment giver is Lisa Linky. That's me. I am me. And we are your co-hosts on this journey of the $1 trillion industry that is wellness.
That's right. And self-help. And hopefully this podcast will make your life suck less. But we don't know.
Or your money back. Just kidding.
But for those of you who are viewing this at home, because surprise, surprise, this is a filmed episode of the podcast.
Added element,
not to brag, to totally brag. Lisa is wearing corn on the cob earrings.
Yes, also from TikTok, from Creative Designs or something.
Yeah, but they're so cute. And you bought me a pair for Thanksgiving this past year, and they're little pieces of corn on the cob with a little pat of butter.
This guy started doing inner child work, and his inner child wanted him to create with
a business.
To create these little like miniature food, and he turned it into a thriving business on TikTok.
I love that, and I love when children become entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. Okay,
entrepreneurs,
entrepreneurs.
What book do you have for us today?
Oh my goodness. Mm-mm. Buckle up.
Oh no.
Because this is quite the book.
I don't know what to think about it from the way you're introing
it. That's right.
Okay.
Today, yes. I am beyond excited, outside of myself excited, to present for you all of the new, I'm going to call them selfies, and longtime loyal listeners.
Selfies? What does that mean?
Well, this is Go Help Yourself. Selfie? Self? You hate it. We didn't talk about it before.
No,
it's a work in progress.
I just can't believe I missed it. I was thinking selfie.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Selfie and selfies. What do you think?
I love it.
You seem like you love it.
I just feel dumb.
You're not dumb. Not totally dumb. Mm-hmm. Okay, so today I am reviewing for you and all of us the New York Times bestseller.
Here we go.
4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mortals by Oliver Berkman.
Is 4,000 weeks my lifespan?
Yeah, bitch.
I don't like That's this right. already.
No, I know. And my sisters and I in our group text, I was telling them I was reviewing this book and they were like, oh my God. And apparently there are charts that you can buy where you check off like when a week has gone by.
Why do I want to sort of see my diminishing time on the planet?
Well, maybe to feel empowered or motivate you.
All right.
To freak you out and make you never get out of bed.
Also, like,
your choice.
I don't know how many weeks I have left.
That's right. And also, you know, Lisa's grandmother, Vivian, lived to be 111.
And three quarters.
Mm-hmm. So Vivian really got... So basically, 4,000 weeks. If you live to be 79 or 80, you get just over 4,000 weeks.
So she had another like 3,000 weeks.
Yeah, she got like 6,000 or 7,000 weeks. It's incredible.
It's not Vivian. The goal. Okay. Hit me
okay,
with
great.
It.
We dedicate this podcast episode to Vivian. Okay. So if I had to summarize this book in one sentence, which is one of my favorite things to do, it would be: confront the true constraints of being a finite human in order to set yourself free.
I love it.
You look like you love it. Help. So it's so interesting, right? Because it sounds like it's like maybe a productivity book, a time management book. But this is not like, wake up at 4 a.m. and start habit stacking your coffee and stretching.
Making like, your bed.
That is not what this book is about.
Okay.
And just real quick, this is a potent book. It's 288 pages. Mm-hmm. The audiobook was about 4.5 hours. So
for those of you just joining in for the first time, Misty reads through her ears.
I do. Mm-hmm. I'm an auditory and kinesthetic learner. I do love reading. Mm-hmm. But in today's world, and you'll hear why in just a few minutes from Oliver Berkman, it is so hard to find time to just sit and read. Like I listen while I'm driving, while I'm taking a walk, while I'm doing laundry. Like there's this multitasking element. And with how much you and I read for the podcast,
yeah,
we kind of have to sometimes. Although you read most of your books, so what am I saying?
I mean, some of us make time.
What am I doing wrong? Okay, so about the author.
Yes.
I had to pull this from Wikipedia because his bio on Amazon is literally blank.
It's Bruce Bryan's.
It's Bruce Bryan's.
He's taking a legitimate turn.
That was a joke for our LLLs who know that Bruce Bryan's, of which we've covered his seminal work, Sassy Texting Secrets.
And how to retain a high quality woman.
Yeah, he's not a real person. Mm-mm. It's not probably not even a he. We have no idea.
That's right.
Oliver Berkman's bio on Amazon is literally blank, and the bio on his website only talks briefly about his current work. Mm. So, according to Wikipedia, Oliver Berkman, born in 1975, is a British author and journalist formerly writing the weekly column, This Column Will Change Your Life, for the newspaper, The Guardian. Yeah, he's honestly, this was my first introduction to his work. He's so cool. The names of his articles are so cool.
For you.
I'm a big fan. For me. Yes, for me. Okay, well.
For me? I already hate him.
Actually, this is like the most Lisa-friendly book I may have ever reviewed on a podcast.
I will reserve my, I don't reserve
That's right,
my
no, judgment. She doesn't. It's unbridled. Mm-hmm. In 2021, he published 4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mortals, a self-help book on the philosophy and psychology of time management and happiness. Berkman was shortlisted for the Orwell Prize in 2006. He won the Foreign Press Association Young Journalist of the Year Award. In 2015, he won the Foreign Press Association Science Story of the Year for a piece on the mystery of consciousness.
Okay.
Berkman's published books include Help! How to Become Slightly Happier and Get a Bit More Done. The Antidote. Happiness for People Who Can't Stand Positive Thinking.
Lisa. Okay, he's up my alley.
And then this one that we're about to dive into, 4,000 Weeks. And he reads the audiobook. He's great. He could totally be a full-time narrator if he wanted to. He's like, I'm Oliver Berkman.
Just, I will point out, if they have a British accent, your quotient goes up for how much you love them.
I trust what they say. Right. I don't need to see their sources. Understandably. 100%. Understandably. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Who are female British authors we've covered on the podcast? Any?
None. Not one.
Not yet. Okay. We'll start off with this quote. Nobody needs telling there isn't enough time. We're obsessed with our lengthening to-do lists, our overfilled inboxes, work-life balance, and the ceaseless battle against distraction. And we're deluged with advice on becoming more productive and efficient, and life hacks to optimize our days. But such techniques often end up making things worse. The sense of anxious hurry grows more intense, and still the most meaningful parts of life seem to lie just beyond the horizon. Still, we rarely make the connection between our daily struggles with time and the ultimate time management problem, the challenge of how best to use our 4,000 weeks. And that's what this book is about, how to reframe our current thinking of time and time management and what to do about our precious few weeks that we're given.
The freshest few weeks.
The freshest. I don't know about you, your old stale weeks. Coming up with that new hotness.
Listen, I'm intrigued. I will say the way he's framing it makes me want to stop doing whatever I'm doing and go do something else.
You would probably be in line with his advice.
So go help yourself. Thank you so much for listening today.
Life is abundant. Okay. So chapter one, I'm not going to go chapter by chapter, but there's so much great setup that you'll hear more from the first few chapters. Okay. And then we'll kind of bounce around. So chapter one, titled Limit Embracing Life. Mm. So he starts us off by explaining how we think about time and how time used to feel before the Industrial Revolution and even the invention of the clock. Mm-hmm. Now, I was like on the edge of my seat for this whole setup.
Yes.
Well, it's Lisa's like, sounds great.
I think that somebody has missed reading books and covering them.
Who's that?
That's you.
Okay. That's right.
You are emanating energy. I love it.
That's right. Well, this book in particular, listen, I don't want to give it away, but it like might be in my top 10 list now. So in modern day, we think of time. I know. Lisa's
shocked.
Agog. Agag. Aghast.
All of the above.
A gross. Okay. In modern day, we think of time like a tool or a utility.
Yes.
It's sort of thought of as like a resource outside of ourselves. Mm-hmm. The way we think about time in the present day, this is his analogy, it's kind of like buckets on a conveyor belt that are moving past us. Mm-hmm. So if we use our time wisely, we fill up the buckets, right?
Yeah.
If we have too many things to fit into the buckets, we feel too busy.
We run out of time.
That's right. If we don't fill the buckets as they pass us, we feel bored or like we've wasted an opportunity.
Yes.
And when we are working on the clock, the buckets that we fill during those hours can feel like they're owned by our boss.
Someone else, yeah.
Hey, those are my buckets.
Yeah, I'm acing this test so far, by the way, just so we're clear.
That's right. And I have a pack of gold stars for if you make it all the way through.
Okay.
But time did not always feel this way.
Right. Before doom scrolling, the day would drag on.
That's right. And even further back than that. So he takes us back in time and paints this vivid picture of what life was like for a medieval peasant. So there was no reason back then. Why are you pursing your lips?
Just into this.
Thank you. So am I.
Yes.
There was no reason to think of time as separate from life.
That's right.
Workers got up with the sun. Mm-hmm. They slept at dusk. Mm-hmm. The length of their days varied with the season. Mm-hmm. You milked the cows when they needed milking. And you harvested the crops when they were ready. And anyone who tried to impose an external schedule on that, like doing all the milking in one day to get it out of the way, would have been rightfully considered a lunatic. Mm-hmm. So this way of moving through your day is called task orientation, mm-hmm. or deep time.
They also died at like 30.
Well, it's not because of the way they move through the day, though.
No,
important
but listen,
distinction.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. He also says, like, I would never say or recommend that we go back to life as a medieval peasant,
let's
right?
Get a cow in the backyard, Misty.
That's right. Wouldn't it be funny if I had committed to the bit and like really got one?
No.
No. So this way of moving through your day is called task orientation or deep time, mm-hmm. as opposed to what we experience in modern day, which is time orientation. Mm-hmm. So in task orientation, you simply do the tasks that need doing whenever they need to be done.
Until they're done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to cram all you need to in a specified amount of hours.
Yeah.
And since you're not measuring everything with an abstract yardstick of time ticking by, you're actually better able to enjoy the vividness of every moment.
Listen, I agree. I am just going to say, mm-hmm. we don't enjoy mucking out stalls as a medieval peasant might.
No. But his well, and by the way, those are my words, enjoy mm-hmm. the vividness of every moment, but you're better able, you're just like in the present moment all the time. Mm-hmm. You're not thinking like time slipping away, I'm not doing enough, whatever. You just are in the moment. Mm-hmm. In many ways, you're not separate from time.
Yes, I understand that distinction. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, this concept of task orientation was so liberating to hear mm-hmm. because that is how I default to moving through my days mm-hmm. when I'm not clocking in at a job mm-hmm. or like I just sort of wake up and I'm like, okay, what needs doing? And it feels like this really flowy way to move through the day. And I just felt very...
I think newborn relieved. Parents also feel that way.
Oh my God. It's like you're looking at my notes because... Oh my God. And I'm such a jerk because I wrote, so Lisa, can you guess what event throws busy modern day people into task orientation?
I am fucking nailing this test.
Lisa gets an A in books.
Yeah.
So yes, having a baby. So suddenly with a newborn, you're thrown into a totally new way of having to navigate time and the demands of life.
Yeah.
It's just
a bomb went off.
Yes. And it explains the sort of hazy timelessness, time warped feeling.
Also that like there's one thing that immediately comes to the front and it has to be done. It has to be addressed.
Yeah.
It's a wailing baby and you do what needs to be done in that moment.
That's right. are they hungry right now?
Yeah.
Do they need, you know, right now?
I'm in dead asleep and they start wailing. Like, I'm up. I'm up, right, and attending to them.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
So task orientation, all well and good. But anytime you need to coordinate something with a large number of people, you need a way of keeping time. So this is actually how the clock was invented, which I never knew the origins
Capitalism.
Of. Well, actually.
Factories.
Medieval monks. But you are very close. These two things really play into each other in a second. So medieval monks needed to start their morning prayers while it was still dark, and they needed the whole monastery to wake up at the same time. Now, for a while, they addressed this by having like
a rooster,
one monk on like night duty, mm-hmm. trying to watch the movement of the stars. But if it was cloudy or they fell asleep, like you can see why this didn't work. So that is the prevailing theory of how the clock was invented. But he goes on to explain that it was also invented around the time of the Industrial Revolution in the late 1700s. And that was the first time that we started to think about time as something separate from us.
Mm-hmm.
So this is when you started to see workers working around the clock to keep machines running, mm-hmm. which meant that instead of being paid for this like vague a day's work or say producing a certain number of bales of hay, they started being paid by the hour.
Mm-hmm.
So as a matter of fact, for anyone wasting time on the job, some factory owners would claim the workers were stealing from them.
They still do.
Yeah, because they weren't using their time productively.
So it's interesting. When we think about the words around the clock, we think of it kind of like a global, like the circle around. But what they're saying is instead of scheduling work around the day, I'm scheduling work around the clock.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think we've come to mean it like that, to think about it like that. Yeah. But what you just said makes sense.
Yeah.
We're working around the clock instead of working when it's time to work.
Interesting. And I also think of around the clock like every hour of every day, around the whole time
circle. Like it's going around in that circle.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we went from time being the medium in which life unfolded,
mm-hmm.
as thinking about time as this separate thing, this thing separate from us.
Fucking monks.
I know, it's all their
fault. We'd
still
be there today.
I know. So once you think of time as a resource to be used, you start to feel this pressure to use it well.
Sure.
So this is where we find ourselves trying to be more efficient, to work harder, to work longer. And soon our entire self-worth gets tangled up in our use of time. This is kind of where we are.
It for sure can.
Right. In modern Western cultures.
Yeah.
That's what's up.
Oh.
And we even start to project into an imagined future,
mm-hmm.
like wondering if things will turn out well, if the way we are using our time today will pay off tomorrow.
Right. Like, well, if I don't get these things done today, my tomorrow will already be screwed.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Yeah.
And like, you know, we see this a lot in like, oh, well, if I don't go to the right college, I won't get the right job. Or if I don't do well on the SATs, I won't get into the right college. And therefore my life is ruined. Mm-hmm. I won't be, you know, some mm-hmm. high achieving, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how we get to the point where we feel like time is something we need to dominate or control if we want to avoid feeling guilty, panicked, overwhelmed,
mm-hmm.
instead of asking ourselves if the current demands on our time are too much.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So this is a really eye-opening chapter that sets the foundation for the book,
mm-hmm.
and it culminates in this hard truth.
Uh-oh.
I know. You'll never get everything done in a day that you want to do.
Yeah.
And anyone, any time management guru who implies that if you're just more efficient or just more disciplined or just better able to multitask, then you'll be able to do it all, is not acknowledging the true situation of the demands on our time or the finitude of life.
Not finitude.
Finitude.
You got real finitude. I agree. I totally agree. Mm-hmm. And it is a hard truth, but I think the sooner that you kind of acknowledge that and let it go, the easier it is.
100 This is why I'm saying this is the most Lisa Linke book. He says that by accepting that making hard choices with what you do with your time is inevitable,
mm-hmm.
that we can at least make these hard choices on purpose instead of them being made by default. Oh, sorry. We have a an irate dog knocking things over.
She knocked over a box of Kleenex.
Across the room, Daisy.
Or maybe she's saying, live like a dog, right? That's right. Like, just acknowledge that time is what it is.
That's right. And at least when you acknowledge, like, I'm never going to get everything done. Mm-hmm. The game is rigged. It's not working in our favor. At least that way you can stop beating yourself up for failing to get everything done that you wanted to, because you know you won't anyway.
Yes.
It's like this freedom in here. Okay. So he says there's a powerful alternative. Letting time use you.
Yeah, daddy. Time, daddy. Use me.
Time, daddy.
I say use me up.
Oliver Berkman. Come on the podcast.
Please. Okay, so let time use me.
So letting time use you. Instead of using life as an opportunity to implement your predetermined plans for success, you could use it as a matter of responding to the needs of your place and your moment in history.
Okay, but then he ruined it by making it so significant.
I know. But also, you will find that this book toggles back and forth between being like, everything is significant and nothing is significant, and then there you go.
Like, that's intentional, and I'm mad at him, but I also respect him for it.
Yeah, it's respectful. It's complex.
It's fleeting.
It's complex. Okay, so he talks about both privilege and systemic factors that go into this enormous feeling of time pressure.
Thank you, Oliver Berkman.
Truly, a very inclusive book. And that we can't fix such problems with vacation or an adult coloring book or anxiety baking or the Pomodoro technique or overnight fucking oats.
Wow, I feel attacked.
That's right. He makes the point that no matter how privileged or unfortunate your specific situation is, fully facing the reality of it can only help.
Okay.
So long as you continue to respond to impossible demands on your time by trying to persuade yourself that you might one day find some way to do the impossible, you're implicitly collaborating with those demands.
You're complicit. You're a collaborator.
That's right.
Traitor. Time traitor.
That's right. Time traitor. Yep. I have to lie down. Whereas once you deeply grasp that they are impossible, you'll be newly empowered to resist them and to focus instead on building the most meaningful life you can in whatever situation you're in.
Okay. So time is the dark side.
That's right.
And resisting it is time is the empire, and being a master of time is I'm Princess Leia.
I love baseball.
Isn't Connor's dying.
So that was chapter one.
Okay. I feel like I got my money's worth.
Chapter two.
Yeah.
The efficiency trap. Uh-oh. Feeling the lack of time exists on every rung of the economic ladder.
Yep.
If you're working two minimum wage jobs to put food on the table, there's a good chance you'll feel overstretched. Mm-hmm. But if you're better off, you'll feel overstretched for reasons to you that feel no less compelling, because you have a nicer house with higher mortgage payments, or because the demands of your well-paid, interesting job conflict with your desire to spend time with your aging parents. Even the winners in our achievement-obsessed culture find that their reward is the unending pressure to work with crushing intensity in order to maintain the income and status that have come to feel like the prerequisites for the lives they want to lead. I know, the look on Lisa's face is like, I mean, really, when you think about it, like, we are all suffering.
Listen, he's not wrong. I'm gonna stretch my legs out too.
Oh,
make space.
Oh, yep. Hold on. We're doing this on a couch for the first time.
Here, if you go in, I'll go out.
On a pink couch.
Do you want to go in?
I feel good.
Okay.
Thanks for asking, Quan. Okay, so don't tap me with your toes. Don't do that. I do not consent. It's not just that this situation of time in general feels impossible.
Okay.
In strictly logical terms, it truly is impossible.
Oh, God.
No, I know. It can't be the case that you must do more than you can do. But we feel this pressure to do everything we want to do, all the things we feel we ought to do, and then all of the things other people are badgering us to do. But we have this tyrannical inner voice insisting that we must do everything, and we feel overwhelmed. But we rarely stop to consider the true rationale of our situation, that we literally do not have enough time for everything on our lists. But he says we rarely stop to consider the rationale of how logical all of this is or isn't.
Truth.
Because that would mean confronting the painful situation of our limitations.
Truth.
So he says we will never solve the challenge of busyness by cramming more in. I mean, because that just makes matters worse.
Yeah.
And that once we accept that we will never find peace of mind that way, because I think we're all rushing towards this idea that we will figure it out and someday life won't be so busy. Mm-hmm. And once we've accomplished X, Y, and Z, mm-hmm. we will find peace after that.
Not true.
That's never coming.
Yeah.
It's never.
All right.
I mean, maybe for a few.
Well, I was just thinking because I'm trying this new system of working this year, but to organize in order to do that takes so much time.
Oh.
It almost feels counterproductive. What's just because it's different. We'll talk about it.
Okay. And just bring it on the podcast. So he says that accepting that we will never find peace of mind that way actually makes it easier to find peace of mind in the present.
Yeah.
Because our peace will no longer be dependent on dealing with all of these demands.
Or completion of tasks.
Exactly.
I love that.
So once you stop believing that it might be possible to avoid dealing with hard choices about time, it gets easier to make better ones.
Mm-hmm.
He says the only thing to do is to let go of the limit-denying fantasy of getting it all done and instead to focus on doing a few things that count.
He says, let go and let God.
Let go and let God and let clock. Chapter 3. Facing finitude.
Finitude.
You have a really bad finitude today. I'm just going to say that.
Wow. I feel fatacked.
Shouldn't have gotten me.
Nope.
Okay. This chapter is where he continues to douse us with another ice cold bucket of perspective, but does so in a way that feels refreshing.
I will say, absolutely not. Some people grew up in a house where with an economist and a finance professor.
That's Lisa.
And so you were constantly taught about opportunity cost and thinking about it like that. And
are you okay?
Yes, after decades of therapy, but also it makes it easier for me to kind of acknowledge this problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's an upside. This chapter is all about facing our finitude
mm-hmm.
and the realization that while planning is helpful, we can't truly rely on any moment in the future.
True.
He says that while this kind of outlook may sound morbid and stressful, accepting this reality is actually the opposite of that. It can actually make you feel free.
That's why I'm like, listen, tomorrow the super volcano in Yellowstone could go off and we'd all be dead.
Honestly.
So what if I didn't clean out my fridge?
Do I want that to happen? No.
Yes. Whoops.
Would elements of it feel like a relief? Maybe. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. He says that adopting this perspective is really the only way for a finite human being to live fully, to relate to other people as full-fledged humans,
mm-hmm.
and to experience the world as it truly is.
Mm.
What's actually morbid is what most of us do, which is instead of confronting our finitude, we indulge in avoidance and denial. Rather than taking ownership of our lives, we seek out distractions or lose ourselves in the daily grind so as to forget our real predicament.
Shut up, Oliver Berkman.
I know. Stop. Get out of my room, Dad. But he goes on to talk about how making deliberate choices from this perspective on how we really want to spend our time and saying no to all other possibilities we wish we had time for is actually what makes our choices meaningful.
This reminds me of that book, Your Money or Your Life, when you put a time money, you know what I mean? Like you put a quantification on the time you spend on something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really...
just rearrange it. It's a new paradigm for thinking about it.
Yeah, it is. And it's a confronting book.
Mm-hmm.
Very confronting.
You felt very confronted.
I do. I still do. I also love it. In this chapter, he also talks about travel and marriage and other kind of hard choice things.
Both are terrible.
That's right. And how making commitments instead of trying to see the entire world or wait for the absolutely ideal partner to come along can actually induce a feeling of JOMO, the joy of missing out, because you no longer have the anxiety of what to choose, but rather can focus fully on enjoying or dealing with the consequences of the paths you've chosen. Really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to start speeding up a little through the book. So chapter 4, becoming...
interesting, we're speeding up, not slowing down or just staying in the present moment to live it fully. I know what I'm going to do, according to Daddy Berkman.
Daddy Berkman.
I'm going to stay in the present moment.
Hot. Chapter 4, becoming a better procrastinator.
Okay.
One of the main takeaways for me from this chapter is to make sure you're neglecting the right things when you're procrastinating.
Like my pets.
That's right. That's right. Or hydrating.
Yes.
Or showering.
Yes.
He brings up the famous piece of advice from Warren Buffett. Mm-hmm. Tell me if you've heard this before. If you want to know how to really be effective in life mm-hmm. and prioritize things, mm-hmm. make a list of the 25 things that you most want to do with your life. Mm-hmm. Order them in order of importance. Mm-hmm. Take a look at the top five. Uh-huh. This is what you should focus on. Uh-huh. But the other piece of advice is to avoid the other 20 at all costs. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Right? So it's often about saying no to things that you are really interested in order to make the time and space for the things that are most meaningful. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of ruthless prioritization. But again, we don't have time to do it all. Chicken agrees. Or was that Daisy?
That was Daisy.
I'm glad I'm not the only one sitting here on the couch just like hacking. Thank you. Okay, chapter 6, the intimate interrupter.
Okay.
So it's really interesting. This chapter talks about boredom and distractions.
Okay.
Right? Because it's like, oh my God, okay, so if we only have 4,000 weeks and I'm really clear on what's meaningful to me, does that mean I'm never going to get distracted with an internet video?
Good luck.
Does that mean? Exactly. So here's this truth about boredom. Think about when you don't know what to do on a Sunday night or when you're caring for a 2-year-old for 5 hours or any other situation that might induce boredom. He says that boredom isn't just about not being stimulated or not having anything more fun mm-hmm. to do.
Okay.
He says that we distract ourselves in moments of boredom because we are actually confronted with the painful experience of facing our finitude. Mm-hmm. We are suddenly obliged to deal with how our experience is unfolding in this moment and to resign ourselves to the reality that this is it.
Yes, it's understandable why I turn on trash TV or I go on TikTok or That's I right. play a phone game.
Or even waiting in line to check out at the grocery store. You're waiting in line, the line's kind of long. You don't just want to sit here and be like, this is it. This is what life is.
This is the world ended right now, the culmination of my life is waiting in a checkout line.
That's right. This is it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, okay. So it's like, no wonder we seek out distractions online where it feels as though no limits apply.
That's right. There's never an end to my TikTok scroll.
There's not. And also it's just like, well, let me watch this inspiring video about what else I could be doing, or let me live this couple's vicariously through this couple's vacation video or whatever. It's like, no, I'm not just in my house caring for a 2-year-old that is, you know,
sick,
that I love, but doing things I'm thoroughly uninterested in. Right. It's like, no, let me live vicariously. So really interesting. He doesn't think that eliminating distractions is actually possible.
I agree.
The most effective way to sap distractions of their power is to stop expecting it to be any other way.
Oh.
So you can hear this pattern of this counterintuitive advice, but to accept that this unpleasantness is just what it feels like for finite humans to submit ourselves to valuable tasks that force us to confront our limited control over how our lives unfold. But of course, he says that acknowledging the reality of our situations is actually more peaceful than wishing they were some other way.
This reminds me about when things fall apart.
Yes.
About like, yes, you're uncomfortable. Yes, you're hot. Yes, that is
exactly
existence.
Exactly. And he gives an enormous shout out to Pema Chodron.
Mm, he does?
At the end of the book. Yeah.
Am I in line with Oliver Berkman?
I think Lisa's pen name is Oliver Berkman. I'm like, Oliver, come on the podcast. And then Lisa's like, I'm already here.
And I would have gotten away with it too if it weren't for them darn kids.
Honestly, would be such an impressive long con. I would have nothing but respect for that. Okay, we are almost through my review of this book. But when I tell you,
I'm going to read
so
it.
So many other pearls.
I'm going to read
wisdom.
It. Maybe I'll listen to it.
If you want to be soothed about how little time you have on this earth,
I'm into it.
You should listen to the audiobook. Chapter 9, Rediscovering Rest.
I feel like I'm already doing a lot of this really well.
You on it, I feel like I have come over to your side. This book has made me more on the Lisa Linky train.
Misty and I are going to get to watch more shitty TV together.
Oh my God. Well, hey, I hope so. And if you're not watching Traitors on Peacock,
what are you doing? What are you even doing?
It's a great way to spend a week of your 4,000 weeks. Okay, so Rediscovering Rest. This was an incredible chapter that explains how we used to view leisure and work back in the Roman Empire. Thank you. Where leisure was the default state of society, with work sometimes being a necessary interruption. But industrialization swept all of this away. And I really loved this chapter because it put into historical context why we value work so highly in the modern day, and also why so many of us have such a hard time relaxing when we do have time off. And we don't have time to go into it here, but he also talks about how religion came into play and Christianity, and how the worst thing you could ever do was be idle. And things really flipped in a short time about really valuing true leisure and rest.
Damn colonizers.
To nothing, I know. So he also outlines that we don't even truly have leisure these days. Like, every moment of time off of work tends to be spent working towards some other pursuit, learning a new skill, traveling to a new place.
Which has its own restrictions. Check in after 11 or check in after 4, check out after, right? Like,
you're right. But it's also just like, again, are we using our time, quote unquote, well? It's very rarely just to exist and be and look around. Like, if I said, oh my God, Lisa, what are you going to do on your vacation this year? Say you work a full-time corporate job. There's no way you're like, I'm just going to sit on my porch for 5 days and look around.
I mean, maybe.
It sounds nice.
But nobody does it, because it doesn't feel like it's a valuable use of that precious time off.
Right. So this is the last chapter I'm going to cover on this review. It's chapter 13. It is titled Cosmic Insignificance Therapy.
I am in love with this man.
I know.
I feel like I'm a nihilist, but no, what I am is an Oliver Berkmanist.
That's right. And that's science.
And I'm going to join his cult.
I signed up for his newsletter, which I'm hoping is the same thing. In this chapter, he offers what he calls cosmic insignificance therapy.
Yep.
An invitation to face the truth about your irrelevance in the grand scheme of things.
I love this man.
Right. And by the way, this all sounds really horrifying. I thought, and like abrasive. But when he walks you through the rationale for all of it, it's like, oh my God.
How many times have I said, we're just clinging on a rock that's hurtling through space in a heliocentric motion?
Like, that's right. It's not even a circular motion. It's like a really violent.
It's insane.
It's insane. I'm fine.
It's insane.
I'm fine.
But I'm fine.
So again, he says, this is not as horrifying as it sounds. Your irrelevance in the cosmic grand scheme of things. Quote, truly doing justice to the astonishing gift of a few thousand weeks isn't a matter of resolving to do something remarkable with them. In fact, it entails precisely the opposite. Refusing to hold them to an abstract and over-demanding standard of remarkableness against which they can only ever be found wanting, and taking them instead on their own terms, dropping back down from godlike fantasies of cosmic significance into the experience of life as it concretely, finitely, and often enough marvelously really is. He ends the book with a huge nod to Pema Chodron, author of When Things Fall Apart, which we have an episode on. I'll link to it in show notes. And an appendix, thank God, 10 tools for embracing your finitude. These include things like adopting a fixed volume approach to productivity, deciding in advance what to fail at, and being mindful. So I just very quickly, I loved this deciding in advance what to fail at. So for example, if I go, you know what? I'm going to fail at keeping a tidy house this month. I'm gonna fail at doing the dishes, and I'm perfectly fine with that because I know that I have a limited amount of time and I'm gonna focus on building the podcast. I'm gonna redo the website. I'm gonna record more episodes. I'm gonna
I get it. I need to do more.
Yeah, Lisa needs to know it's fine. It's fine.
But you're right.
Right. So then when you see the dishes piling up and the house looking untidy, You're not going like, oh my God, I'm a horrible person or horrible woman. Nope. I knew this was going to happen. And this is perfectly in line with my plans.
I'm using my time in another area right now.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So my friends, that is 4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mortals by Oliver Berkman. I really encourage you to read or listen to the book.
I'm going to listen
to it. If you're intrigued, you can get it wherever books are sold. And you can also head to Oliver Berkman, that's BURKEMAN.com.
Berkeman.
To learn more.
Misty, great job.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
First book review back on my side.
How's it feel?
In years. It feels good. I love knowledge.
You have learner, right? Are you a learner?
Yeah. And my top five of Clifton Strengths. Which everybody, Lisa Linke is officially a Gallup Clifton Strengths coach.
Certified coach.
She is certified. If you want to get your strengths read and interpreted by Lisa, it's a phenomenal experience. She's so talented. And I find the Clifton Strengths to be a pretty incredible tool.
They feel like a nice compliment to this book.
They feel like a nice compliment to everything. I'm not going to lie. Like your working style, what your family can expect from you, what you're interested in.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
My pleasure. Misty, what is something that you're going to immediately implement from this book?
Oh, like a really dire view of time and ruthless prioritization. I mean, in all seriousness, I think really already it's kind of helping me grow up a little and my perspective.
Say more.
I don't know if I want to call it like an innocent or a naive view of like, I can do it all. I can see the whole world and I can have an incredible home life and I can also start a business while also thriving in an employee role. And it's like, no, you can't. So just, I'm going to really let it, it's already, the seed is planted, it is dropped in. And over the next few days and weeks, I'm just going to see what unfolds.
What as, sprouts.
Yeah, as I kind of like digest and process this information. But I'm just going to be more intentional.
About where you're spending your time and the things you're choosing to do.
Yeah, and you know me.
My queen loves to pack a day.
I love to pack a day. My to-do lists are forever. They're so insane. And also, I always get frustrated with myself.
I know.
When the house isn't gorgeous or someone comes over and I'm like, oh my God, there was a pile on my bed and they saw it. You know, and it's like, oh, I don't care anymore. Like, I feel like this book is making it so that
I'm
like,
dying in 2,000 weeks.
I'm like, you know what's more important than like the, and this is obviously going to be an ongoing battle because it's deeply ingrained in me. And I think a lot of people and women in particular, but it's like, I'm going to be like, you know what's more uncomfortable than how this person who's coming over might be judging me for my time is spending my precious frickin' time.
Yeah.
Trying to do things that don't actually matter to me.
I love that.
Yeah.
I also feel protective. I don't think it was innocent or naive. I think you just now have a more mature and realistic view of it. Yeah. And you can't when you're two because every day is like a year.
Well, that's right. And this idea also of like this productivity, this maximizing, this like always improving yourself. Look at this freaking self-help podcast that we started in our spare time. Right?
Which
hustle. Checks a billion
into
boxes.
The hustle, hustle
oh,
culture.
Oh, and by the way, he talks about how hustle culture is really nefarious.
Yeah.
Because it's actually overwhelm and like way too much busyness, but rebranded from this perspective of this like, well, it's exciting and it's something you should be doing for yourself.
Yes.
Right? And so, yeah, I think I'm going to be a lot more intentional about my time. And I'm also going to give myself the freedom when I can to live in a more task-oriented way. Right?
Get a cow in the back.
Get a cow so I can milk it when it needs milking. That's it.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
That seems right.
That's right.
I also just want to say this is really, I'm into this book. I can't wait to listen to it.
Shocked.
I know. I'm super excited. Because part of it is really delineating between you know, what is given to us with capitalist capitalism mindset, religion mindset, and what is truthful just existing as a human being.
Yeah. And this is not for the faint of heart.
Mm-mm. But I think it's important work to uncouple because I think we'll be happier in the long run. Look how happy I am constantly, Misty.
You seem so...
I'm never upset.
Yeah. And the last nugget that I'll offer for this episode is I have stopped striving for happiness as a state of being. I think something that resonates more with me is satisfaction.
Contentment. Yeah.
I just want to go to bed every day and be like, you know what? I'm satisfied. I tried at the things I could try at. I spent time on the things I cared about. I did my best.
For whatever that was that day.
That's right.
And I agree because I just want to go to bed every day.
Honestly, why we ever get out of bed?
I don't know.
That should be the thesis of our book. We stay in bed and you can too.
Yes. How to stay in the bed as the sheriff of Victu.
How to stay in bed without getting played.
Oh, Bruce Bryan.
Sassy sleeping secrets for getting the bed you want and making the bed you have.
Misty, thank you so much. This was truly wonderful. I am going to listen to this book and I can't wait.
Stay tuned for Lisa's review of this book, which is going to be wildly different.
Yeah. Misty, thank you. I love this. I'm so grateful. It feels good to be back giving some book reviews. Yeah. If you were enthralled as I was with this book, or you hate the very idea of Oliver Berkman as a human, please write to us.
Yeah.
You can reach us always through our website at gohelpyourself.co, where you can also sign up for our newsletter. And you can also email us at gohelpyourselfpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Tell us what you think of this episode.
Link to all of that in show notes. And if you're Oliver Berkman,
come on the podcast. Please.
And with that,
Time Daddy.
And with that,
life
is abundant.
Go Help Yourself was produced and created and performed and talked by Misty Stinnett and Lisa Lemke.
And talked.
In Los Angeles, California. The music was created by Matt Sav, the inimitable. Did I say it? Matt Sav. Again, please visit us on our website, sign up for our newsletter, gohelpyourself.co, or email us at gohelpyourselfpodcast@gmail.com.
That's right.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.